The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Dueling Reviews, a show where two guys sit down with one comic and we talk about it in detail. I'm Steven Schleicher. Over there, as always, is Matthew. Hi, Matthew.
How are ya?
You can follow Matthew on Twitter at Mighty King Cobra. You can follow me at Major Spoilers. And you can follow our publisher at Image Comics. Because this week we're reviewing Red City Number 1, written by Daniel Corey, art by Mark Dos Santos, and a bunch of other people involved in this book. This is a police procedural.
Right. Sort of a caper, almost.
Yeah, caper that takes place on the red planet of Mars.
In the far-flung future.
Yeah, but not necessarily just the far-flung future, but a far-flung alternate reality.
Yes. Each planet in our solar system, including Pluto, which I do like the fact that they apparently... They brought Pluto back because of gerrymandering, but including Pluto.
Not gerrymandering, political redistricting.
Yes, gerrymandering. Although some of these people are lizard people, so maybe it's salamandering. But in any case, yes, each planet is now its own sort of nation state thing.
Mm-hmm.
Under the United something something.
What is it? The
United Solar System.
United Solar System, yes. Solar System of Planets. I guess the way to best describe it is each planet is its own country, even though the authors kind of say it's their own state. Right. Everything is overseen by the USS or the NSS.
Right.
Because of the way the book goes on, you know, at one point Venus and Neptune. Yes. Decided to, secede from the rest of the solar system. I don't know how you do that, but that caused
especially
a great war.
Those two, because they're like literally almost as far apart as you can be.
Yeah. But there was a big war, and now, you know, things are starting to come back to normal, and it looks like Mercury is wanting to do some trade negotiations and open up trade back with Venus and
retro trade.
Everybody is kind of spread throughout the galaxy. So just because you may be on Mars doesn't mean that you're Martian. You could be from Neptune. You could be from Pluto. You could be a walrus man for all we know.
Walrus man is cool.
Now we are introduced to a young officer.
Cal Talmadge.
Officer Talmadge, who's gotten himself into a bit of trouble.
Yes. And interestingly, the story starts, and this is one of those things in media res where you're like, we're in the middle of the story, and then the narrator, first person narration, is saying, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
And I kind of, it's one of those things where I want to say it's something that's starting to get old, but here I actually feel like it works.
Well, it's the hook that's needed, because otherwise... there's a lot of exposition in this book.
A lot of info dump.
The creators have to establish this universe. Mm-hmm. They have to establish who Talmadge is. They have to establish why he's being essentially bumped down from an officer position back down to police detective.
Beat cop, basically.
Yeah. And he's got to be put on a task. Well, without this kind of hook at the beginning to say, hey, I'm about to do something really stupid, but first, let me tell you how I got to this point.
Right.
Then this book would not be any good at all. Yes, there is the cliche of jumping back in time. I agree with you. But you're right here. It's very necessary.
It's kind of Chandlerian in its breakdown. If you were to take it, you know, instead of taking place on Mercury, if you were to say it was Morocco and Cal Talmadge is basically one of your basic, Humphrey Bogart protagonists.
Yeah.
You could tell a very similar, and in fact, I think that's what they're doing. Is you could tell this story So it's kind of like the thing that you were talking about a few weeks ago, where we are basically genre shifting.
Yes.
A story.
Mm-hmm. I saw this not as a Casablanca, Humphrey Bogart type thing, more like maybe a little bit Maltese Falcon, only because his quest or his job is right. to find the daughter of the the Mercury ambassador. Mm-hmm. She's gone missing. I think it's Mercury. She's gone missing, and he's tasked with finding her before the trade negotiations break down completely and right. all hell breaks loose, possibly another war. So everything's resting on the shoulders of our hero, and he's kind of playing detective, bumbling through the Martian landscape, or Mars Central is the name of the city, which is kind of a red city. It's called Mars Central, Red City, the big red. If you read it kind of in that Casablanca. Joe Friday, Casablanca, yeah. Humphrey Bogart kind of narration, it makes a little bit more sense. But Red City is kind of basically Hollywood and Las Vegas mashed together over 100 years. And there's a bunch of ne'er-do-wells and undesirables, including some lizard man who was part of the – is he Neptunian? No, he must be from Neptune.
Well,
because the Venusians are
Venusians
the blue guys.
Are green.
No, the
green,
Venusians blue, are blue green. With the big gill things hanging off their ears.
Right.
And then the Mercury guys are orange.
The Mercurial types are orange.
And then you have the insect guys, which are the Martians.
Right.
And this is the thing that's a little bit weird for me in this book, because there are all sorts of different aliens in this system. And it's not like there's one specific humanoid race per planet, right? So it's not like the humans from Earth look like humans in here, but the Neptunians are all going to be a certain color and the Mercurians are going to be another color and the, you know, right. Martians are all this, because we've got some guy who's a walrus man who runs a hotel. You've got the lizard people who were on Neptune. Right. And I guess there's more aliens here than there are the nine planets. And that makes it a little bit weird at times.
The phenotype or genotype, whichever word I mean to use, for each planet, I kind of read that in the old school Guardians of the Galaxy theory, which is these are humanoids or humans even who have been transformed to exist on the terraformed planets.
I suppose. I mean, if it is that many thousands or millions of years into the future, then sure.
Right. Although I did enjoy the fact that there's a scene in a holographic strip club.
Yes.
Where I swear to you, the performer is Big Barda, which I'm taking it as a little nod to the fact that maybe we're on some Jack Kirby turf here, but
maybe
it's also, you know, kind of pretty.
Yes.
Didn't she though?
Yeah. And I think the girl that the detective that Talmadge is looking for is also interesting too. But I mean, there's just all sorts of interesting characters populating this world. And I rather enjoyed the story and the setup. I guess my biggest problem is that there's so much info dump that I was on like page 22 or something like that. And I was like, what is this? A 75 page issue? Because it's just there's so much that's being dumped on the reader that they have to absorb and understand in order for this world to make sense. And to me, that was a little bit of a turnoff. And it's interesting because we've talked about, you know, like the Golden Age, Silver Age of comics.
Right.
Which are super, super crowded with word balloons and narrator exposition. Boxes and all that stuff. And it's interesting here that back then I didn't mind it so much, but here it kind of was a bit overwhelming for me.
I didn't necessarily have that, but then I think I kind of expect it, especially in a first issue and especially in a first issue with a kind of a sci-fi premise.
Yeah.
You're going to have that, you know, we had a similar thing going on with the first issue of, what was the one with the teleporters that we did a couple of weeks ago? Yeah. The homeless guy got caught in the teleport stream and killed.
Oh yeah. The Fuse. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Yeah. Yeah. The Fuse had a similar part where the lead character came, you know, and did the first person narration. And then we had a long conversation between him and his Sarge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily feel like that's a bad thing. At least here, I feel like it worked for me. There's a moment through it. There's actually a couple of moments through it where we get important character bits.
Right.
About Cal, as much, you know, we learn as much about Cal as we do about the universe throughout all of the exposition, which I think is kind of nice.
What is kind of helpful in this is that in the at the end of the issue, there is a rundown of who all of the characters are. Who are all the Earthlings? Who are the Mercurians? Who are the Neptunians? Who are the Venusians? Who are the unknown species? I mean, that kind of gives us a little bit, but again, it doesn't give us all the different species or aliens that we see in this book. But it is very helpful to help you figure out who everyone is.
One-eyed snitch. That's all.
That's all you need to know. Yeah. I like the, I like Colonel Slade though, because he reminds me as a cross between Tommy Lee Jones and Richard Nixon.
See, I looked at that and I thought Ronald Reagan.
And, well, at first I did too, but I was like, ah, it's a little bit more overweight for that. And then I was like, okay, so if I was looking at another president, then it would be Nixon. And then as I'm flipping through it right now, it looks like a Tommy Lee Jones, but it could also be a really wrinkled out Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah, I can see that. Interplanetary commerce being what it is, economic realities have come to light that have softened Mercury's position.
Yeah.
They won't have Nixon to kick around any longer.
Yeah. So it's it's interesting. There's interesting characters, and it's if you want to compare it to Casablanca, I can go along with that. Yeah. I mean, there are interesting characters, and they're all at different levels of bad. Yeah. Because even Cal Talmadge, the reason why he's in the brink when we first meet him is because he's been running illegal gambling and black market stuff under the military's nose.
Yeah, the influences, I mean, the Philip Marlowe influences here, the kind of the bits and pieces of, I don't want to say pastiche, because it's not a pastiche of either science fiction or the noir detective tropes. It's a goulash.
Noir-fi.
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 Or sci-noir. Sci-noir.
Sci-noir?
Sci-noir, yeah.
Sci-noir. Okay, like, I can go with that.
It's science, pretty keen.
Dark. Well, but you'd have
maybe
to put
it's
the
noir.
You'd have to put the noir first, because it would be black fiction or dark fiction.
Nah, I don't like that.
Because noir-fi, it couldn't be science dark.
Noir-fi sounds like I'm trying to count in French with a speech impediment.
But you wouldn't want to say science dark or dark science, because it's not that.
I personally would say science dark. I think that that's perfectly legit. But then again, I don't speak Le French, except for one important phrase: "Je flippe du flap de Boeing Feugen," which I think means "bring me the waitress and a plate of escargot," if I'm not mistaken.
So what did you, I mean, are you interested in reading another issue? I guess my big issue is there's so much info dump, and if the rest of the book's like this, it's going to be really hard to get through.
I don't know. I actually am, and I think part of that comes on the success of the art.
Hmm.
I like the way the art puts together bits and pieces. The art is just as much of a chimera, for lack of a better word, as the story. Because Cal is basically wearing a three-piece suit from 1945, but he's wearing a leather Fast and Furious jacket over it.
I like that look.
I love that. Everybody
kind of wears that 30s gangster. I mean, the Obeck is wearing, you know, a gangster polyester suit. The waitresses are wearing Daisy Dukes. Suit.
Yeah.
You know.
If you go through this, it's kind of like they've taken all of the things that you know, which they have, and they've really intentionally created anachronisms throughout it. You know, on Mars, you see something that's basically a Vegas type hotel that's supposed to look like the Palace of Versailles. And you're like, oh, okay, I can see this is a Vegas thing. And then they cut down. And of course, you know, guys with snakes on their face or something.
Yeah. The art is really interesting.
Yeah. It, you know what it reminds me of in a lot of ways, just visually, is the first season of Star Trek, where all of a sudden you'd be walking
along. Next Generation
along,
or like original series?
No, the original,
or,
okay. Old school. Where all of a sudden you'd be walking along and then suddenly there's a green girl in the background.
Yeah.
And because space.
Because they can.
Yeah. That to me is what that felt like. And I really enjoyed it. Artistically too, if you're going to have a story with a femme fatale, as this clearly seems to have, you got to have someone who could pull off the femme fatale. And Dos Santos does really well on the femme fatale in the early pages. And, you know, the holographic ecdysiast, for lack of a better word. Actually, that's exactly the correct word. So I'm going to stop asking myself to correct myself when I'm speaking to myself. But yeah, the holographic girl is cute. All of the spaceship sequences, stunning. There's a shot about three pages in where they're basically emulating a camera push space. And you get a close-up of this ship, and it kind of looks like it's got a Star Trek influence, but it's also something that's really, really intricate. It has what looks like working parts and things that do things.
I mean, it's a well-thought-out world. I mean, it really is. I mean, the attention to detail, the vehicles when you get down into Mars Central, and you see the vehicles and the cars and the neon and just everything, just it feels like a thought-out world.
It's a cool book. It's a cool.
It is.
A cool book.
My recommendation is try this book out. If you're into sci-fi, if you're into detective tales, then this is a good mix of those. If you're looking for capes and tights, or you're looking for, you know, people with superpowers, or somebody that has some kind of psionic powers to control people or anything like that, you're not going to get that here. But my recommendation is to at least check it out.
I say get it. This is an interesting book, and this is kind of, you know, another example of what Image has been doing really well since probably, you know, the turn of the century, just consistently giving us titles that nobody else would. Not that they couldn't.
Well, and that's
but they would.
That's part of the creator owned, right? I mean, they come up and they say, "Hey, here's what I want to do." They run the numbers, see if they can make their money off of it. Then they do it, and you know, everything works out. Yeah. And I do like that, and I like some of the smaller publishers like Image, like Monkey Brain, that do these kinds of projects. And that's why I think we end up with titles like Saga. We end up with stuff like Sex Criminals and Satellite Sam.
Pretty Deadly.
A Fatale. Oh, no, that's IDW, I think.
Velvet. Have you read Velvet
No,
yet?
I didn't, but I saw that there's a trade out for that.
You should pick it up because Velvet is Brubaker spy stuff.
Yeah.
But the main character is a female spy in her late 40s at the end of the Cold War. So it's basically, you know, if Miss Moneypenny knew all of the secrets and suddenly went to be a field agent. For lack of a better word.
Well, I saw everybody today on Twitter talking about it, probably because Feedly was down. And so people had to do and talk about something else. So in between the tweets of Red City, I saw people saying, oh, I picked up the new issue of Velvet. I saw that it's in. I can't wait to read it. And I'm going to check. I'm checking right now to see if it is on the Comixology, which I'm sure it is.
Yeah, but I would say definitely if you're looking for something that, you know, celebrates the comic forms and what you can actually do within a comic book without being tied to cliches or tied to a specific genre. This is not a superhero comic, but this is a story that I think really works best in comics. If they were to do this as a movie, I feel like it would be really overwhelming, and the info dump would be a lot less manageable for
me.
But if you were to put this together as, you know, I don't know, stick Will Smith in it. Will Smith likes to be in.
Don't put him in it. Put what was that guy? Dang it! Now I can't think of his name.
Put Macaulay Culkin in it.
No, God, I forget who this actor is.
What's he in?
I couldn't tell you. That's the problem. I can see his face. He kind of looks a little bit like he's a pretty boy.
Right.
But he reminds me a lot of Chris Isaac. But he's an actor. And for some reason, I want to say James Bond, but I know he's not been James Bond. But he's kind of in that same kind of. Let me just look up.
Does he have a vaguely simian tone to his face, because it could be Josh Duhamel, however one pronounces that.
I am thinking Clive Owen. That is who I'm thinking of.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, get somebody in this, just somebody nobody's ever heard of. Get Zach Wolf in this.
Do a quick search on the Google and type in Clive Owen, and then, you know, over in the right column where they put up his little bio information, and right above that they have a bunch of pictures. There's one, mm-hmm. which is a smaller picture. I don't know if it's you'll get the same pictures that I do, but it's the one in the middle top. That's what our character in this book looks like.
I got image results.
No, not image results. Just on the main web results page. And then over on the right side, they usually have a column of information about the actor's age, where he was born.
Does he have a mustache?
No, Clive Owen doesn't have a mustache.
He does in this picture.
Not the one I'm looking at.
Well, so you're looking at the wrong one.
We must have got, but that would be a good person to play, or who looks a lot like Talmadge in this book. So Velvet is available over at Comixology. There's only 5 issues.
Right.
I put them all in the cart. They are range from 99 cents all the way to the most recent issue, which is issue 5, which is $2.99. So I'll check it out. They're all in my cart. I'll check out and do that.
Fun book.
Yeah. Okay. So next week from Dark Horse Comics, we have The Strain #1. And even though that book's been out for a while, this is part of Dark Horse's one for one where they just it's only $1 to read the first issue. And with that TV series coming out in the fall, I think people are going to want to try to grab that. Axe Cop, American Chopper #2 comes out.
Axe Cop.
Clown Fatale. Speaking
Clown
of fatales, that's the one that Rodrigo had a really... I don't remember if he liked it, but it was very different for him.
He had a lot to say about it, and I don't know that it
entirely
positive.
Sexy clowns don't do it for me. I just finished watching Legend of Korra, Book 2, Spirits. I've finally had a chance to watch like the last 4 episodes earlier this week, and I really like that series. And next week, if you are somebody who likes to wear your love for a series on your sleeve, there are 4 Legend of Korra patches coming out next week: Air, Earth, Fire, and Water. So you can get on board with that.
You're one element short of the classical set.
Yeah, there you go.
You're missing his heart.
You're one basket short of a picnic.
Hey.
DC Comics has Batman and Ra's al Ghul #32, Batman Eternal #11, Batwoman #32, Fables 141. Mm-hmm. We're getting pretty close to the final issue there.
150 is the end.
Yep, 9 issues away. Harley Quinn #7. New 52 Futures in #7. You didn't care for this week's installment. I'm still not up on what's going on over there. So
the thing is, I'm on the fence. I really am, because I started out very bitter and filled with vague hate, and that hate is still there, but they're doing stuff that I kind of want to know if it goes anywhere. You remember that point in the first 20 issues of 52 where it was all about bringing Sue Dearborn back from the dead?
Sue Dibney, yeah.
Yeah, Dearborn was her maiden name, by the way. And then it was all like, blah, 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 and then they didn't do it, and Ralph shot himself in the face.
Yeah.
I'm afraid that we're going to get to that fascinating point where all of a sudden they're talking about bringing Sue Dearborn back from the dead, and then Ralph shoots himself in the face.
Mm. Yeah, but neither one of those exist in this universe.
But I'm speaking metaphorically.
Oh, okay.
I'm making a larger point in that in this story, if we go through and jump through a bunch of hoops to love Mr. Terrific, and then at the end it turns out that not only does it not happen, this 5 years later universe never happened and Mr. Terrific isn't really like that, I guess. I'm gun shy.
Is this Earth 2 Mr. Terrific?
No, this is Mr. Terrific.
Okay, so did Earth 2 Superman make his appearance this week?
Not
or
in that
when
issue.
Was that? Okay.
Earth 2 Superman is in Earth 2.
Oh, okay, in that series.
Future's End takes place in the future.
Okay, but I thought, doesn't it take place in Multiple Universe I, too?
It takes place after a war between the DCU main Earth and Earth 2, because there's references to the Earth 2 war.
Excellent. Interesting.
Ooh, and we find out who the mysterious barman is.
it's Beppo.
It's Red Robin.
Justice League gets some action figures next week. The Justice League
Let's review those figures.
They're actually, I don't know if you've watched that animated movie yet. It's pretty violent, Justice League War.
I just saw All-Star Superman on
cable. So you're like way behind.
Well, the cable people play what they play. I saw something with Cyborg in the new 52 Justice League.
That would probably be not this Justice League. Well, let's see. Justice League.
It may have been Justice League Doom.
Yes, probably. That's what it is. Yeah. So War has a bunch of action figures, and people who like that look, you can get Flash, Green Lantern, Shazam, Superman, and Wonder Woman all next week. All of them 1995.
That's an interesting team.
Well, yeah, because Shazam actually has a really cool role in that movie.
Shazam.
It's really cool. So you might want to check that movie out if you can get a chance.
Is he still strong?
Yes, he is. But nobody knows that he's a kid except for one person. And it's interesting. Yeah, it is. By the end of the movie.
I'm wonderful.
IDW Publishing next week has Charles Schulz's Peanuts Artist Edition hardcover. Judge Dredd Mega City 2 Director's Cut. Littlest Pet Shop, number 2. My Little Pony Friends Forever, number 6. Parker the Hunted Novel, hardcover illustrations by Darwin Cook. That's $29.99. That must be a reprint.
Didn't we do Parker the Hunter?
Oh, yeah, like a long time ago. That's why I said it must be a reprint. Popeye Classics Ongoing, number 23. Powerpuff Girls, number 10. Samurai Jack, number 9. Star Trek City on the Edge of Forever, number 1. Put that sucker down. Holy cow, I cannot wait to read this because Harlan Ellison, he's the one that wrote that, right? Originally?
Yes.
I believe he's collaborated and helped flesh out the script a little bit more to tell this story. So I'm looking forward to Star Trek City on the Edge of Forever, number 1, next week from IDW Publishing.
I think it's actually Into Darkness. Star Trek City on the Edge of Forever, Into Darkness.
Yes.
Is what it is.
Let's see. V-Wars, number 3. Winter World, number 1. Image Comics has Aphrodite X, number 11. Fatale, number 23. Fatale is Image Comics. Good. Invincible 111. That's a second printing of that. Manhattan Projects, number 21. That's going to be cool. MPH, number 2. That was that Mark Miller piece, right, that we did a couple of weeks ago.
The one with the guy who plays Barney on How I Met Your Mother.
Yes. Sex Criminals, number 6. And, of course, Matthew's favorite, Savage Dragon, number 195.
It's about time for me to check back into Savage Dragon for 3 issues.
Yep, there you go. Over at Marvel Comics, you've got Avengers number 31, Daredevil number 4, Elektra number 3, Iron Man number 28, Iron Patriot number 4, Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man number 1, second printing Maquette variant.
Ooh.
Or, I'm sorry, Marquez variant.
I was going to say, how are you going to do a Maquette?
That's what I was like. How do you do that? Is that a picture of a statue on the cover?
Yes, that would be so cool.
Somebody posted on Twitter today that you had just posted, I think it was you, that did the Moon Knight number 4 review up on the site. Was that you or is that somebody else?
Chris did Moon Knight.
Oh, Chris did Moon Knight. Okay.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, holy crap, I didn't know Moon Knight was even back. And I was like, well, you can probably go pick up the first 3 issues and get caught up. And sure enough, next week, Moon Knight 1, 2, and 3, third and second printings come out from Marvel Comics.
Nice.
As does Nova number 18, Sin, Original Sin number 4, Punisher number 7. Man, that She-Hulk number 1 is already into its third printing.
Yep.
That's very popular. Ultimate FF number 3 and X-Men number 15 all come out. Of course, there's a lot more. I'm just touching on some of the highlight ones.
Right.
In all the rest, we've got A Piggy's Tale number 2, All New Fathom number 7, Archie 656, Archie Funhouse Double Digest number 6,
Professor and Marianne.
Battle Royale Angels Border graphic novel. Uh-oh, Matthew's got a severe thunderstorm warning in his area.
I do?
Well, then that was the sound that just went off, I thought.
I heard that on your end.
Oh, on my end? Well, let me look. Maybe it's me that's got that. Holy crap. What does it say here? Oh, severe thunderstorm warning at your last known location. That's okay. I'm down in the basement.
Where are you from?
Western Kansas.
Oh, out there.
Dick's Trade Paperback Volume 2. Followed right by Doodle Jump 1. that's what it's listed here. Dick's Trade Paperback Volume 2. Doodle Jump Number 1. Edge of Empire Number 2. Fathom Annual Number 1. This is the first time that Aspen has done an annual, and they're doing it with Fathom. That's out next week.
Fathom is kind of their bread and butter.
Yeah, yeah. Femme Force 167. I haven't read Femme Force in like forever.
Neither have I. I didn't realize they were still making it.
I know. That's what's crazy.
I dropped it 5 years ago with issue 120.
Oh, man. Last time I read it was probably like 91, 92, something like that.
Oh, back during the Black Shadow War.
Yeah.
That's some good stuff.
Harbinger number 24. What is this? Hentai Prince and the Stony Cat graphic novel.
Well, I don't know that I'm going to find out. If it says hentai and animal,
I'm going to highlight that.
I believe I shall post.
I'm going to. This is volume 2. of that. So let me see what this is. The Hentai Prince and Stony Cat, also known as Heniko and Towanai, is a Japanese light novel series written by and illustrated by Media Factory. Has published 8 volumes since 2010.
Wow.
And let's see, what is it about? Yoto Yokodara is a second-year high school student who is arguably the biggest pervert at school.
Yay!
Well, there you go. His problem is that he's not good at showing his real emotions. One day, his equally perverted best friend completely transforms and gets rid of his impure thoughts, a feat he attributes to the power of the statue of the Stony Cat. As the rumors suggest, by wishing upon a statue and giving it an offering, one can wish to remove a personality trait from themselves that one does not wish to have anymore. However, this will remove the unwanted trait and give it to someone who does not need it. Ooh. As Yoto is making his offering to a statue, a girl named Tsukiko Tsukitakakahashi. Oh, I'm terrible at that. Susukakushi arrives to make her wish to be able to be more like an adult and not show her emotions so easily. Both of them wish upon the Stony Cat, and they're surprised. The next day at school, Yoto is unable to tell a single lie, and Tsukiko is unable to show any sign of emotion whatsoever. After realizing that they do not like the change that happened, they work together in trying to find out who's received their trait that was taken away in order to get it back. They meet somebody, an attractive second-year girl who has just transferred to their school. She is always being confessed to by many boys in school, but she has no friends and is always alone. Blah, 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 blah.
Wow, this sounds complicated.
It does sound complicated. So where does the hentai prince come from? Just because he's a pervert?
I think the pervert, yeah.
All right. Interesting. Well, that's a book that's out next week from who's publishing that? Media Factory. The anime is licensed. There's an anime, too. Is licensed by Sentai Filmworks in North America.
Sentai Filmworks?
You've learned something today, listeners.
Ding! The more you know.
You also know that next week, Loki and Ragnarok and Roll number 4 comes out. As does Magnus Robot Fighter number 4. Red Sonja number 10. Let's see. School Bites, graphic novel volume 1 and 2. Simpsons Comics 212. The Lone Ranger number 25. Tug the Bull Terrier number 1. Twilight Zone Annual 2014. And then XXX Aholics Omnibus Trade Paperback volume 2.
I believe that would be Susuhu Kakushi.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
It was after Kakushi. All right.
Yeah. Anytime you see a vowel, generally there's a new syllable.
Yeah. I got the Susu right.
Susu.
I dated a girl whose name was Sue. T-S-U. And her last name, Yu.
Sue Yu?
Yes.
Oh, and I knew her friend, I Gunna.
She was a law student.
You're kidding.
No, I am not.
You're kidding.
Not.
She had to get married before she could practice.
Probably.
She married a man named me.
But yeah, that was her real name. Now somebody's going to look her up. Nah, I feel sorry for her.
Oh, crap.
That's okay.
We should probably, we'll just edit that out.
Nah, it's fine. She got a kick out of it. She laughed, too. So.
Apparently, Tsukiko has a sister named Tsukushi Susukakushi. What?
I don't get me to try to pronounce it. I'm not going to remember it. Not going to be able to do it. But I challenge you, young Matthew Peterson, to go read Hentai Prince and the Stony Cat next week.
I may actually, well, I don't know about next week.
Or at least read the first graphic novel. I'm sure it's readily available. I wonder if it's, wonder if you can get that through the Comixology. Hentai Prince and Stony Cat. Oh, Comixology did make an announcement today that Viz Media, even though they have their own digital app, they're bringing over something like 500 issues of Viz Media titles over to Comixology. So people can get their manga over there, and it does read right to left. I don't know how Guided View works, but for people that are into their manga and want to get it from Comixology, there you go. There is no Hentai Prince and Stony Cat.
I've used the Guided View, actually, and the Guided View is interesting, but it's kind of a different experience. Not for manga.
Oh, no, I like Guided View otherwise.
For Comic-y comics.
Yeah.
You know that in the last season of...
Buffy?
Kyoryuger, the last season of Super Sentai, one of the guys was named Utsuse Mimaru, which really sounds like a pun.
Okay.
That's his name. Utsusemimaru.
There you go.
There's also a guy named Ramirez.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I had a little problem today.
Uh-oh.
It's somewhat racially motivated in Power Rangers. Why is the Yellow Ranger typically Asian and the Black Ranger typically Black?
Well, not typically, because after the first season of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, they go way out of their way to make sure that they avoid that.
Okay.
But yeah, in that they actually they kind of shone a light on it, because when Walter Johnson and the girl who played the Yellow Ranger quit, mm-hmm. Tui Trung, they replaced him with an Asian male and replaced her with an African-American girl.
So they just flip-flopped.
They reversed it, yeah.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I guess I'm just looking at first season stuff, and I was like, hey, wait a minute, that seems a little weird.
Well, you know what's even worse, Steven?
What's that?
Every Yellow Ranger in Japan is Japanese.
What?
Yeah, and that's something, you know, that people have called out before.
It's different. So, I don't know.
The last Black Ranger that I'm aware of was Dylan from Power Rangers RPM,
mm-hmm.
who was, like everyone on Power Rangers RPM, he was a kid from New Zealand. But, yeah. I guess there is a Black Ranger now. There's a Black Ranger in Megaforce who, if I'm not mistaken, may be East Indian in his...
I'm not saying I have a problem with people of different nationalities. And in fact, I wish there were more nationalities represented in Power Rangers, especially if they're supposed to be protecting the Earth.
They do a lot. They've had a lot more diversity than the source material.
Mm.
If you go back and you look at Power Rangers Mystic Force.
Yeah.
Mystic Force, I believe, has a Samoan gentleman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and a couple of Caucasian kids and an African-American kid. It's one of those things where they kind of do what they can, but they always try to be as diverse as possible in their
thing. Well, that's good. That's good.
Even in seasons where there's only three Rangers, like Dino Thunder, they actually try to break it down. And you do almost always have a female Ranger every season.
Well, and I think that's...
Sometimes two.
I think that's good. I think they should be... What is there, seven people on the team?
Generally five. Five, and then there's a sixth ranger.
Which is who?
Depends on which year.
Oh, so...
This year, the sixth ranger is a kid named Orion.
But is he white? White ranger is usually the sixth?
He's silver.
Oh, okay.
The sixth ranger changes. A lot of sixth rangers are silvers and golds. You get some weird sixth rangers who are something entirely different.
Hmm.
Like last year's sixth ranger was Gosei Knight, or Robo Knight, who's a robot.
A robot?
Yeah. Who knows how to rap? Wiki. Whereas the season before, if you go back a season for that, their sixth ranger was an idiot named Antonio.
Oh, I remember that. I did see an episode of that.
The season before that, the sixth ranger was actually twins, Jem and Gemma, who were gold and silver rangers.
Okay. Well, I know my son was watching one of the Power Ranger things, and the kid was acting like a total moron.
Yeah, that's Antonio.
Okay. And I was like, what is this crap you're watching? And then he must have got the message, because then he switched over to Pac-Man from the 1980s.
Oh, that show's much more
crappy. Yeah. And then he decided, oh, I'll drive my dad even further up the wall by watching the Mario Brothers.
Super Mario Brothers Super Show.
Super Show, yes.
Got a hook on the brothers.
With the big, what's his name? Al,
Captain Lou Albano.
Captain Lou, yeah.
I hate that show.
So did I, but it was amazing.
I love it's Nintendo. I love wrestling. But you put them together and, you know.
But what was amazing is how many of, I don't know what it was, WWF back then or whoever it was. How many of those wrestlers appeared in the show?
Well, yeah, he's Captain Lou. Everybody loves Captain Lou.
I know, but it's just like all of a sudden, what was the, was it not Sergeant? Was it Sergeant Slaughter? No, who was the wrestler? Yeah, Sergeant Slaughter just shows up one day and has a problem. And it's like, Sarge. What? And then, of course, you know, with Lou's relationship with Cyndi Lauper, she shows up in an episode and it's just, I was just like, what are you watching? And then, of course, they get into the cartoons and it becomes even more dopey. But Netflix. You can relive the worst part of your childhood or have your children relive it for you.
You should be nice to your childhood. There was nothing wrong with our childhood. That wasn't wrong with every other childhood either.
I don't know. I didn't have cable.
Well, that doesn't... What?
I know.
What?
I know. I never had cable until I went to college.
No, I'm not questioning the fact that you had cable. I'm questioning why you think not having cable is the...
Because
like
I wasn't exposed to all the thing.
Factor.
I wasn't exposed to a lot more things that people were more in the know of because of cable. Because when you have, you know, your five channels or your three channels, two PBSs and an independent,
got two PBS,
you get to watch whatever is deemed appropriate for community standards. So, yeah, you could watch the crazy movie on Up All Night, or you could watch the occasional Doctor Who or see a booby on the Monty Python.
Right.
But, you know, to be able to sit down and watch Big Trouble in Little China, or to be able to pop in and watch, I don't know, Porky's. Oh, I couldn't do that as a kid.
Three
miles away, my friends were tuning in at 11 o'clock at night to watch Cinemax.
You didn't miss anything.
No, I didn't miss it. Well, you know, I think there's something about that experience, because if you're too young to be able to go to the movies by yourself, and your parents don't want you to see the R-rated movies just because they're R-rated, not because of they're informed about the movie itself.
Right.
Then I think there is part of that pop culture that you miss out on by not being exposed to those kinds of things.
Well, yeah, but Porky's isn't really that good of a movie.
No, it's not that good of a movie. But when you think about...
He's a wake-on guy.
But when you think about the time, right? Wasn't after Porky's came out, wasn't there always like references made in class or school, or, hey, man, did you watch Porky's last night on the hobo? And then you're like, I watched Porky's last night. Oh, what about that scene in the shower room where they're like, eh? I'm like,
thanking the guy.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I remember that. Oh, wouldn't that be awesome to happen?
Poor Steven.
Yeah. So I think there is, you know, sometimes, and I'm, you know, well, first world problems, you know, sometimes when we miss out on some of those cultural bits, I think we're put to a disadvantage. But, you know, my sons don't have to worry about that because they're exposed to everything to an extent.
Lurking.
Yeah.
Listening.
I mean, I think your daughter's the same way, though, right?
Oh, yeah. My kid.
Don't you think she's better off by being exposed to the things that are on the internet or the things that are on cable?
Depends on how you look at it. I mean, there's some stuff that she watches that I just don't want her to ever, you know, see.
Oh, well, yes, of course.
And the thing that's really great is she still will not watch Family Guy without me. Even though it's on and she'll bump into it, she will not watch it without me. Or, you know, at least that's what she says.
What do you think of my 7-year-old watching Ghostbusters, the movie?
Wow.
Because it's available. So it's the 30th anniversary of Ghostbusters.
It's a PG movie, right?
PG-13? Well, it's not PG-13. You can look it up really quick. I'm almost positive it's not PG-13 because I think it came out before Gremlins did. Or
it did.
Red
Gremlins
Dawn
came out in 80. Frassum.
Yeah,
that came
so
out.
So it's a Ghostbusters 30th anniversary, and in July, Matthew and I are going to do a bonus tracks for Ghostbusters. But it's on Netflix, and he opened it up and was watching it. And I was talking about Ghostbusters and something else. Oh yeah, he'd saw the Lego Ecto-1 that I built, and he's like, "Yeah, I started to watch that movie," and I was like, "You did?" Because there's some sexual innuendo stuff throughout that movie, and he's like, "Yeah." I stopped after the guy started doing the mind reading with the cards. So he stopped pretty early on because I think he knew that this is something that I probably ought to get dad's permission to watch. And I don't think it's terrible for him to watch, but there are a lot of sexual innuendos that one, he's probably not going to get, but maybe he does. He is 7 and he does have the internet.
That's true. You know what I want to be able to do?
What?
I don't think the child would have necessarily a problem seeing Ghostbusters. I want for someday you and I to create the technology by which we can edit together the version of Ghostbusters that would actually star John Belushi, John Candy, and Eddie Murphy in the
roles.
That
would be kind of interesting. Is that who they were originally going for?
That's who he wrote the script in mind with, yeah.
Well, Aykroyd, who was Eddie? Who was
Aykroyd
Murphy
was
going to
be him.
Yeah.
Murphy was going to be Will. Eddie Murphy was going to be, what's his name? The guy.
Winston?
Ernie Hudson, yes.
Okay.
John Candy as Egon, Belushi as Venkman.
Interesting.
What's his initial writing expectation for what I believe?
That's interesting. John Candy? Then, wow, that'd be really weird.
But as you also Venkman? Have to remember, No, Venkman would be Belushi.
Oh, okay. Oh, as Egon.
As Egon.
That'd John still be Candy. Weird.
It'd be fun, though.
And who else? Who would have been the Rick Moranis character?
I don't know. It's a good question. Let's find out. Or maybe John Candy was going to be the Rick Moranis character.
I could see that more so, because Candy is more of a physical comedy thing, and that's kind of what Moranis was doing in that.
I loved him.
John Candy or Rick Moranis?
John Candy.
I did, too. And, you know, a lot of times I look at some actors and I'm just like, you know, comedy, yes, I get it. And then, again, thanks to cable, someone was like, oh, dude, you've got to see this movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's got John Candy and Steve Martin in it. I'm like, well, I like Steve Martin. I'm a wild and crazy guy. Mm-hmm. And I watched that movie and I was like totally blown away by Candy's performance, because not only is it super funny, but it's also bittersweet.
And it's a quiet kind of brilliant.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
I do love the fact that they managed to throw in a riff on the Schmengi brothers.
Yeah.
But apparently now, if I'm reading this correctly, John Candy was going to play Lewis, and they wanted Gozer to be played by Pee Wee Herman, Paul Rubens.
Oh, that'd have been crazy.
As just a guy in a suit. But when Paul wouldn't commit to the role, they apparently just changed it over and did the whole
female.
The kind of weird. She wasn't actually female. The actress.
Yeah, they call her. They say, take this, you know, bitch.
Well, yeah, but sort of a gender unexpected thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's an alien from another dimension. Does it necessarily have a gender?
It's
know.
A demon.
Gozer. Gozer's a Gozerian.
Yeah.
Many Shugs and Zools knew what it was to be cooked in the belly of the slore that day, I can tell you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have diverted way off of the original point of this show. That's okay. Sometimes we like to do that, give you guys a little extra. Speaking of extra, we were mentioned bonus tracks just a moment ago. Ghostbusters in July for the 30th anniversary. June is Big Trouble in Little China to celebrate Boom Studios' Big Trouble in Little China launch last week. If you want to get in on this action and you want to help Major Spoilers continue, go over to members.majorspoilers.com, members.majorspoilers.com. That's where you can become a VIP. A little bit helps, $2, $5, $10 a month. It's not a lot when you consider everything that we do here at Major Spoilers. Not only are we doing the website, but we've got something like 7 podcasts that we're doing on a regular basis. And, you know, your help can help us continue to entertain you. And that's what ultimately we want to do, is just entertain you in a number of different ways, whether it be videos over at our YouTube channel, Major Spoilers Video, or whether it's commentary and reviews that you can find over at majorspoilers.com on a daily basis, or whether it's a podcast, something that you put in your ear and you listen to and you enjoy on your drive to work or your moment doing yard work, whatever it may be. If you think this episode is worth a quarter, 25 cents. Consider becoming a $2 a month member. If you like this show and you like Major Spoilers and another show, just think about it. If you did $10 a month, it's like paying 20 cents per episode.
Yeah, that's ridiculously cheap.
That is ridiculous. I mean, you can't even buy a stamp for 20 cents. Well, I mean, you could buy a bunch of 1 cent stamps, but you're not going to get it sent anywhere.
I don't even think you can get like penny candy for 20 cents.
What? Penny candy for 20 cents?
I know.
It's like 55, I think, the last time.
Then during the rectification of the Voldroni, the Traveler came as a very large moving torb. And in the course of the third reconciliation of the last of the McKetrick supplicants, they chose a new form, that of a giant snore.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your help. Members.majorspoilers.com. That's where you want to go. And we will be back next week with another issue. What are we doing? We're doing
comic books
next week.
Star
it's the first
Trek,
issue.
Into Darkness.
Into
City
Darkness
on
of the
edge
of Forever.
Darkness.
That's right. And we'll see you next time.
Bye,
thanks,
Harlan,
everybody.
Bye.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2014.